Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. I am Alex Midas. He is Jacob Negro. Jacob, sir, how are you doing?
Pretty good, Alex. How are you doing?
I'm good. I woke up nice and early because I was excited about the bands. Are you usually up early or were you excited too?
I'm usually just up early, earlier than they announce them. But yeah,
nice.
I was excited because...
Yeah.
We've got some events, or I've got some events coming up that Standard actually matters for still. Before my Modern Pro Tour, I've got my eyes on the Arena Qualifier weekends in July, which is going to be Standard. So that's going to be exactly this format that we're talking about today. And then about a month after that, there's a Laughing Dragon NXB. That's just kind of like an open event. I mean, it's technically an RCQ too, I think, though. You know, it's like a 20K prize pool or something. And, it's also Standard in Phoenix, so.
Yeah, you know, when we talked about what I thought they'd ban and whatnot and what I would ban personally, I only recommended a couple of cards just because I figured they want to be light-handed with, you know, they're moving to three-year Standard, and I think their mentality now is they want to protect people's investments and paper cards and that sort of thing. But now that I saw the huge list of bans, it was really exciting. I'm kind of stoked to brew with some of the new cards.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this seven's a lot of bands at the same time.
For sure. It's almost like I still don't think it was the decision I would have made if I was in the position to be worrying about that sort of thing. But for me personally, it's definitely like a selfish thing that I'm happy about.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's kind of like a weird thing. So they mentioned when they do these Standard bannings, which happens at this time of year, kind of right before rotation, how with Standard being increased by a year, they're pretty interested in banning cards that have been legal in Standard for 2 years or close to 2 years, you know, that would have rotated if it was only a 2 year one, which they did kind of follow here. But I think there's some like interesting nuances. I mean, banning Steelcutter doesn't follow that at all. That card's only been legal for a couple months, but that's super reasonable to me. It's just the strongest card in Standard by a lot. But the other ones, all of them except for Abuelo's Awakening are... No, Abuelo's is in that category too, right? They're all in that category of being printed like over a year ago.
Mm-hmm. You know, before you get too deep into it, let me read out what's banned really quick. So for Standard, we have Corey Steelcutter banned, Abuelo's Awakening banned, that's the 4-mana sorcery that gets back Omniscience, Monstrous Rage banned, Heartfire Hero banned, Up the Beanstalk banned, Hopeless Nightmare banned, This Town Ain't Big Enough banned. So lots of cards that people were expecting, I would say, Monstrous Rage, Steelcutter. And maybe even Heartfire Hero. But then they also did, you know, some proactive bans, Up the Beanstalk, Abuelo's Awakening, which I, you know, interrupted you while you're talking about Hopeless Nightmare and This Town Ain't Big Enough.
Yeah. So last week, what did we say? I mean, we predicted they'd have to hit something out of red, at least Rage or a Mouse or both. So both mm-hmm. happened. That doesn't seem that weird. And then they did also what we talked about, which was hit both Beans and one of the Omniscience combo cards. But then they did a thing we didn't even mention, which was hit Pixie and kind of hit it in two ways, which is pretty surprising to me.
I agree. One of the things they mentioned about Hopeless Nightmare in particular, and This Town Ain't Big Enough, I guess, was that they seemed kind of focused on the fun factor.
Yeah.
Which I played, I've been playing at a local store with some more casual players. And they play Standard sometimes. And I know one person was playing the Pixie deck a lot. Like, that was his deck. And everyone always jokes with him about how they don't want to get paired against him and how it's so miserable to play against.
Yeah, getting Hopeless Nightmare chained is not very fun.
And then This Town Made Big Enough. In some games, that doing that repeatedly with the Storm Chaser's talent is pretty annoying.
Yeah, I agree. I think... So it's interesting to me is... So I think... Hitting things in mono red makes sense. That's, you know, a deck that's performing extremely well, and it's been around since Bloomborough, so almost a year now that we've kind of just been seeing basically the same deck. Hitting something from Omniscience makes sense because it's performing so well, and it's kind of just a boring combo deck. Up the Beanstalk kind of fits perfectly in this category of a card that's seen play basically since it's been printed. So it's basically had a nice 2-year run in standard anyways. So it kind of fits that category perfectly of like, it's been in a lot of strong decks and it's just been a deck to worry about its entire existence.
Banned and modern already.
Yeah. So that one makes a lot of sense to me. The Pixie ones, while I agree with your points, it's just, I'm not sure they've put up the data. They did it, you know, the one spotlight series in Atlanta, but that was the breakout tournament for that deck. And that was January, you know, and these are cards that even though, yes, Hopeless Nightmare is from the same set as Monstrous Rage and Up the Beanstalk. And yes, This Town Ain't Big Enough also would normally rotate with this rotation. Outlaws of Thunder Junction was the last set of that year. So it really didn't have time to shine. And then on top of that, you know, it's just these cards have only been in the spotlight together for half a year. They didn't even see play at the last Worlds, even though their entire deck was legal, you know, like to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely on the aggressive side. It's interesting that person that I play with locally, I mean, that Hopeless Nightmare and this town ain't big enough. He Hesper Pixie was his deck. I wonder what he does now. I guess he's just kind of screwed. So there's definitely real costs to these sort of things.
Yeah, definitely. It hurts people a lot. You know, I think that bans like these sometimes kill standard more than, you know, attendance, especially more than people give it credit for.
To steelman their argument, do you think, because a lot of these changes, you know, I think they're trying to make standard different. They even joked about calling in early rotation. I always complained that the mono red plus Up the Beanstalk sort of created this pincer effect where it was hard to build a slow deck or anything in the middle. Like you had to have a really fast deck or basically be a beanstalk deck or like a mill control deck. Was there anything that the Pixie or Hopeless Nightmare deck was keeping down that you think they might have been trying to prop up?
Mostly just expensive cards. I mean, they made that point. And when I was testing for Aether Drift and Pixie was a much more major player than it was at this one, the combination of Pixie and Mono Red, I think, did this, or Gruul, I guess, back then, where like even Shieldred is kind of on this category, but five drops in particular are really vulnerable to like the Hopeless Nightmare bouncing kind of leaves you often in spots where you're going to have to probably like discard every card except your five drop and be on four lands and hope you draw the untapped lands the next turn or things like that. And then This Town Ain't Big Enough, it's just kind of really punishing for cards without ETBs that are just trying to stick board presence. You know, I would say even like I always considered Preacher of the Schism a card that was kind of on the line against Esper Pixie, where like some games, the fact that you play it turn 3 on the play and it dodges Hopeless Nightmare dodges Nowhere to Run was pretty good in those matchups. But some games, you know, especially on the draw, even more so, like you just play it and they say, okay, bounce your guy, bounce one of my things, like replay my thing. I spent 3 mana to bounce your thing basically and get value. And then, you know, then you start talking about Shieldred and it just doesn't even look playable.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's true. And then on the other hand, like when I saw Hopeless Nightmare, when I read that, I thought, okay, I can kind of see that. And when I saw This Town Ain't Big Enough, I was like, wow, that's kind of wild. Although I've been playing Magic long enough to know that they sometimes do this with bans. Like I remember they banned Reflector Mage one time kind of randomly in a format. After banning some other, in the same ban announcement that they banned some other broken cards.
They banned Smuggler's Copter and Emrakul. And Smuggler's Copter was in the same deck as Reflector Mage. Though obviously Reflector Mage had had a home before that card was printed, so there was some precedent. Banning two cards out of the best performing decks, like Mono Red and even Prowess with the Monstrous Rage overlap, that makes sense to me. Banning a card that isn't a deck you expect to overperform with these bans also makes sense to me. Banning two cards from that deck that is a deck that, you know, has to now like kind of live up to expectations and you didn't even give it a chance, that's what's pretty crazy to me.
Yeah, I agree. Jim Davis made the point that banning Heartfire Hero also sort of banned the rare mouse.
Yeah.
The two drop, which I hadn't thought of before. And he would have liked to seen them ban the rare mouse instead of the Heartfire Hero, because the Heartfire Hero probably could have seen play still. Whereas banning the Heartfire Hero, you're probably not really going to be playing with the 2-mana Offspring Mouse anymore.
Yeah, so I agree. You probably won't play Manifold Mouse at all. Emberheart Challenger might still see some play, but yeah.
So it's kind of like they banned 3 cards from Mono Red, which maybe it's worth it. I don't know. I'm still kind of the opinion that Mono Red is the type of deck that could be kept in check pretty easily, whereas Steel Cutter was the real problem, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I agree.
So before, we're mostly going to talk about standard this episode, but before we do that, I'm just going to touch real quickly on the rest of the ban list, and then if you have anything to say, we can talk about it. So we have Pioneer, no changes. Modern, no changes. Legacy, no changes. Vintage, no changes. Pauper, no changes. Alchemy, Corey Steelcutter suspended, whatever. Historic, which we both played a tiny bit of over the last few days. Counterspell is unbanned. I don't know what you think about that. Thought that was kind of odd.
I couldn't have told you it was banned.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's funny because Memory Lapse is banned.
Right. That's fair. Yeah, I noticed that.
And they unbanned Counterspell, and I'm like, wait a second.
Memory Lapse is really not fun, so that's somewhat...
Maybe that's why.
It's a really horrible card to play against sometimes.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know that Counterspell is really what that format needs. But
yeah, I don't know. The that format is still just kind of a mystery to me, even after seeing some of the people qualify in their decks.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm just not really in a spot to comment about it too much. The only other thing, Modern no changes makes sense. Pioneer no changes. I still feel like Pioneer needs something. Like maybe they should have just banned Corey and maybe even a mouse or something in Pioneer too.
Yeah, Pioneer just hasn't been in the spotlight for a long time, so people haven't really had to care. But for those of you out of touch with Pioneer, if you have a Pioneer event coming up, I mean, it really looks like what we just saw in Standard. There's just Mono Red and Phoenix are really dominant. There used to be Demons in that mix, but I think Demons is going to suffer from the same thing the black midrange decks did in Standard versus Phoenix, where they just can't beat a Steelcutter in play. Like, it's just too hard for them to interact with. It's not worth warping their deck to interact with it, because Abrade is like a terrible card against cards that aren't Steelcutter. It's not even that good against Steelcutter if they get a Monk.
Yeah, it's such a dumb card. I think probably the level one place to start there is to figure out if you just want to play, like, what if the Mice deck is good against Phoenix, sort of how the Mono Red deck was good against Izzet, or if Phoenix is kind of structurally different and has a better matchup and that sort of thing. But okay, so the most obvious place to go after you get a bunch of bans, especially bans of cards that just came out, is to think about what decks were good before that maybe didn't get hit by the bans or didn't have cards in there. What prior good decks do you sort of have in mind that come to the top of your head after seeing these bans?
Yeah, so there's a few, but I'm going to mention kind of what the big one is here, and I think that's Dimir Midrange. This is a deck that I think people really like playing, and it couldn't get hit at all. And aggressive strategies were certainly its downfall, and they kind of hit the major two aggressive things in the format. Ito as a card, you know, we've had a lot of standards that have been defined by the really powerful planeswalkers, and then they kind of tone down planeswalkers. Kaito is a really powerful planeswalker. It's just not very good when you're behind on board, because even though it can stun something, it can't really protect itself from two creatures, or it can't protect itself from creature lands. So there's still some things in check for it. But, you know, it's a card that just always gets value when you play it, if you can ninjutsu it. And then it, you know, just will draw a card immediately or worse, things like that.
Yeah, and I'm pretty impressed. I was pretty impressed with the Duskmourne cat to the Flash cat. Obviously, yeah, the deck's kind of built around that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that combined with just, there's a lot of good black removal in Standard at the moment, which is something that might actually change with a rotation. But, and then of course, the Bat, if people remember, that was a pretty big part of Standard before some of these red cards took over.
Yeah, well, the Bat actually had kind of phased out of that deck at the time. Interestingly enough, it kind of returns just to give them any hope of beating Steelcutter, I think.
I see. Okay. I didn't realize that quite exactly.
Yeah, my opinion of Deep Cavern Bat, and, you know, Enduring Curiosity counts, but I don't think Kaito is very good with Deep Cavern Bat. I don't think ninjutsuing it is very strong. I really, you know, valued being able to buff its power and toughness. I felt like that was a pretty big deal.
So what did you rely on instead? You have the Siren Pirate, obviously, and then there's the Flash Tapper.
Floodplus Drowner is just kind of too perfect with Kaito and Enduring Curiosity, just, you know, because you want to get him damage. And then I saw there used to be a lot of Fairy Mastermind, which now that Up the Beanstalk is banned, it also doesn't really have as much good counterplay. It used to be one of the better cards you could play against Beanstalk decks because of that interaction.
Yeah.
So
and that, that card's gotten worse because of stock up too, because the blue decks are more often to, their card advantage is to be selecting two cards rather than drawing.
Yeah, and then on that topic, stock up, still one of the strongest cards in Standard. Really for homes for it, we're just talking about like Jeskai and blue-white control, or there might be a Dimir control deck, you know.
Yeah, control in this format has always kind of done okay. It seems like maybe a little bit of an underrated deck. It a couple people did pretty well with it at the last Pro Tour. I mean, I think literally two. Like one person did good with Jeskai, one person did good with Blue White.
My impression is that Dimir is kind of a nightmare matchup for these control decks, though.
Yeah, probably. Ultima might be decent against them. Some other new cards I haven't thought of.
Ultima's helped region. A lot against Enduring Curiosity in both regards, because if it's in play, it won't come back. Or if they're past a four mana to plan on flashing it in, they can't flash it in response to Ultima and the turn's over. So those are both really nice interactions.
Yeah, but I agree structurally it is a difficult matchup on the get-go, and that's something they'll have to prepare for. Because I agree that's probably going to be a big deck.
Yeah, and it's just, what the best case against Kaido is like when they ninjutsu it, they draw a card and then you untap and get lost it. You can't even get lost it on their turn. Like it's pretty brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another big problem. The other decks, I think the other big one is maybe the black mid-range decks with Unholy Annex. I mean, they lost the Pixie element, but I think they're probably still going to be good regardless. Unholy Annex is just a really strong card. And again, we have a lot
really
of good blocker
mobile. Yeah, and it was also a card getting really pushed out by aggressive strategies. You know, we've printed some decent demons in the recent set. They might not see play, but, you know, Demon Wall is a two-drop demon, and that's a lot of value with Annex to be able to have it started on turn three.
Yeah, and I read Reed Duke's article about the Pro Tour, and he said they had a deck that had like Demon Wall, the new Genova that puts a counter on it right away, and Rot Cursed Rakshasa, which I believe is also a demon, and then you could Genova put a counter on it, and then once it dies to its whatever keyword it has that kills it.
That sounds like a pretty cool place to start. We built that deck for the last Pro Tour, but we mentioned it, that whole package,
And then there was the... So VV was a card, obviously, that kind of broke out at the Pro Tour. You know, my first blush is that it, the way it looks is just like an aggro deck, probably won't exist anymore. Paulo Vitor Domitarosa showed up with kind of a brew that had a lot of the same Izzet cards, but notably not any of the ones that were banned, and it starred VV.
Yeah, I would say, once again, that deck features a card I also think is really powerful that got untouched, which is Prof's Eidetic Memory. VV I also think is pretty powerful, but Prof's just kind of fundamentally, it's a lot like Beanstalk, where, you know, it's just like a two mana non-creature spell. It gets immediate value. So if your opponent is planning on killing it, they're just going to be down a card. And then it just does something pretty powerful if you build your deck around it the rest of the game. And they've given us so many tools in Standard that building your deck around it has felt pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. And so the Izzet Cauldron deck has that. And then the Jeskai Oculus deck, that was a pretty good deck. Maybe tier two, you know. But that didn't have anything banned from it, so.
Yeah, I would say, you know, this isn't definitive. Paulo's deck looked really impressive to me, and it kind of looked like he managed to just cut a color from the Oculus deck and maintain very similar power. It looked like the deck played out almost like this. It had very similar play patterns, you know. Instead of helping hand, you have Cauldron, but Cauldron's like also like Graveyard Hate, which is pretty nice, and you just do powerful things, cauldroning your VV rather than helping handing your Oculus.
So that might just be the new direction for that deck.
Yeah, white sideboard cards definitely can be nice. He kind of just main decked, I think he main decked three into the Flood Maw, which are kind of pretending to do what cards like Destroy Evil can do, but
yeah,
obviously not the same.
My other question is, do you think that any of the decks that had cards banned will survive?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, you can still build an Izzet Prowess deck, but I think, you know, especially when I'm talking about Dimir midrange being a top player, you might not find success with it, because I think Steel Cutter was really such an issue for these decks with Cutdown and Go for the Throat, and they don't have that anymore. I mean, maybe Astrologian's Planisphere can kind of emulate that. Mono Red, there might still be a Mono Red aggro deck, but it's not going to be a mouse deck. It can have Screaming Nemesis and Burn spells, but it's just not going to look anything the same. Omniscience, there are 5 mana options to return it. There's one from Brothers War that gives you a Power Stone. It could also hit a Planeswalker. A whole turn difference in combo speed. That's a huge deal, obviously. Even in non-aggressive matchups, just giving your opponent one more turn to maybe develop a threat before they start passing with counter spells. You know, like your blue-white control opponent can slam a Beza into play and then still feel safe.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say is presumably the format's going to be a bit slower, at least, without Cutter and Red being as strong.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the Dragon package of Omniscience is still pretty strong. Also, you know, it's interesting they didn't ban Omniscience and instead banned a Boiler's Awakening, because I think especially with Roiling Dragonstorm and Meringue River Regent just getting printed, combined with they don't really have a need to play Lockdown anymore because the aggro decks kind of got banned, and then Omniscience is gonna be legal for 5 years. So, you know, it's just if they print like anything, it could still make Omniscience work if, you know, you can reanimate it. It doesn't even have to be a white card, you know.
Do you think it's a mistake not of just to have banned Omniscience?
Kind of, because I kind of just won't be surprised if cheating Omniscience into play happens again. The Roiling Dragonstorm River Regent thing is so perfect, you know? It's just two cards that let you discard this Omniscience, and they also just function to loop your deck once you have Omniscience in play. And it's just kind of the perfect package for that deck.
Okay, speaking of Meringue River Regent, I have a list of cards that I wanted to keep an eye on in this new standard, even before rotation, but certainly after as well. Cards that have impressed me, but maybe didn't see a ton of play. I mean, Meringue River Regent obviously saw a ton of play in Omni, but I was also having success with it a lot in control decks. I think it's just a super strong card.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if you want to play counter spells, you really need to make sure you play these instant speed ways of card advantage to punish your opponent for not playing into your counter spells. And the Regent also just being kind of a stabilizing threat means, you know, you're just pretty covered. You don't need to put, I mean, these decks have way more win cons than previous control decks you even had. I imagine your games aren't even that slow between Beza and River Regent and potentially creature lands and Fountain Port.
Yeah, totally. There's sometimes, even if you plan on using River Regent mostly as the draw three mode or whatever, there's so many openings to just slam it as a giant double mana.
Oh, yeah.
It's
absolutely
a super good card.
Yeah. As someone that's played a lot of Omniscience, like, it's surprising how a game can just play out where Regent is the first amount of pressure you've played in the game, but because your opponent is maybe slow playing into your lockdown or things like that, you just completely,
or they're trying to hold up negate, if you know,
exactly.
Or spell pierce, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Dispelling Exhale is a card that I think is quite a pretty strong counter spell for this format. It works well with River Regent.
Yep.
As for other dragons, I've liked Scavenger Regent in like a blue black control deck. I was pretty happy with. The body is decent. Not quite as good as River Regent, but it's a decent win con. And then being able to have a recurable sweeper, I found to be pretty good as well.
Yeah, you know, I've seen the Scavenger Regent just pop up in Golgari mid-range decks, and it made a lot of sense to me. It's just a 2-for-1 in a sense, and also just gives you a main deck sweeper potentially if you're really behind on board versus an aggro deck.
Yeah, that makes sense. Other cards I have on this list from Dragons, because, you know, Dragons at Tarkir is when Cori Steelcutter came out, so that's kind of when the format got super warped.
Yeah.
But I actually think Ugin Eye of Storms is quite a strong card.
I believe it.
Like, maybe this isn't the format for it, but I was pretty happy playing a package with, like, some Maze Mind Tomes, and then this might sound funny, but I had Candy Trail, and it's like a surprisingly good card.
I've played against mono-white decks with all these things you're saying.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know why mono-white is the choice to fit in the colorless things, but I guess because you want the sweeper. I guess Ultima's pretty awkward with artifact ramp, so I guess you avoid that one, but...
Yeah, I mean, you could play a Day of Judgment. I mean, in theory, you could fit this sort of package into almost anything, which is why it's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. The format's slowing down. Ugin is a really powerful card, even without a deck that's that many colorless permanents. It just has a massive amount of loyalty and affects the board when you cast it, even if you only play it in +2. That's how it played out in Limited, and it was the best card in the set.
I wanted to, for a moment, I wanted to talk about my experience with Candy Trail, because I think it kind of, you know, it kind of looks like a janky limited card. And while it's not an awesome card, I think it's not super different from Serum Visions, which is a card I played a lot in Modern in the past, where Serum Visions was a card that also was, it was legal for a long time. People didn't really play much of it. And then people sort of started realizing that it was kind of a good cantrip where you get the card draw delayed, but you still get the scry two and the draw. And then, of course, Candy Trail, you have to pay two extra mana, but you're gaining three life. So in a slow control deck, that can sort of be worth it some of the time. So yeah, I was pretty impressed that card, with that card. I don't think I'd play it if I didn't have Ugin in my deck, but that's a pretty good combination. Another card I had in mind from Dragons was Elspeth Stormslayer. Playing with card has impressed me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, this is pretty short before rotation, but Mono White was definitely like a pretty powerful deck for a while.
Yeah, that's right, even in Standard.
I know, interestingly, the World Championship... the decks from that event, they look really weird, including the deck Javier won with like one main deck cutdown compared to what we see in Standard now. And that's because going into that event, actually, I think Mono White was kind of a boogeyman and actually in a very weird thing. I think no one showed up with it at the tournament. It's very
strange. And if people don't play Omniscience anymore, I mean, that's yet to be seen. Yeah. Something like that could see a resurgence. I think Omniscience is one of the big reasons where you can't really play a deck like that. But okay. Elspeth itself, just obviously, it's really strong in that deck. You could probably fit it in some other spots as well. It's definitely been an overperformer.
Yeah, I agree. When I've played against Elspeth in Standard versus Blue White Controller, Mono White, I'm definitely really impressed. I guess on that topic, another old deck that I haven't even seen with Elspeth yet, though it's probably amazing, there's just been like these green white tokens decks that have existed before. And you know, when we were looking at them for Pro Tour Aether Drift, it wasn't even something I looked at for this Pro Tour, but you know, the mouse trampling over kind of thing was a huge deal.
Yeah, that makes Elspeth a lot worse if you can't actually use the blockers for anything useful.
Yeah. Honestly, Elspeth might just be a huge winner here. That sounds really powerful to me.
Yeah, it's totally possible that it was being completely held down by Cutter and Monstrous Rage, because obviously the whole point of that card is that you're making two tokens a turn while gaining loyalty, so you can just chump block over and over.
Yeah, and then the zero for flying, or the potential to enter and kill a single big permanent if your opponent's just playing something of that strategy, all really powerful.
Yeah. And then, obviously, we did our top 10 list for Final Fantasy already, but there's some cards in particular that I either didn't have on that list or I think have performed particularly well. I've really liked playing around with Esper Origins. Have you played this card at all?
No, I haven't.
So I think it might be the sort of card that people can play in green, ramp, or midrange decks to replace Beanstalk. Obviously, it's a different card in totality, but I've been really impressed with it. I didn't realize on first glance, for some reason, that when you flash it back from your graveyard, you also get to do the scry 2, gain 2 again.
Yeah, I've played with it a lot in draft. I mean, it's really strong there, so I could believe it. You know, it could slot in pretty well in a unit deck.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I've been playing it, is in unit decks. Funny enough, I think it's the best performing limited card in the set by stats. Wow. In Final Fantasy.
That's close to what I would have guessed. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's just so easy to just get into your graveyard, either by discarding or milling it. Casting it is not the best on the front side, but it's not the worst if you don't have another play on turn two.
What stats, though? This is kind of a side note, but it's game in hand win percentage doesn't represent how good that card is.
No, I was looking at Premier Draft, games win played. So just having it in your deck.
Okay.
It's at the top. Maybe it's below Smuggler's Copter now, looks like.
Got it. Games win played are
interesting
stats, though I'm surprised.
Gameplay win rate,
That's an interesting stat, I guess, because my impression is when you looked at stats like that, a card like Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunger is at the top of the list, because when you cast that card, you win. But it has an issue with cast. So is there...
Well, it's not game... Is it game on Steam? I think it's just game. I think it's just if it's in your deck, gameplay win rate.
Oh, the win rate of when it's in your deck. Okay, that yeah. makes sense. Got it.
Games drawn is games that you've drawn it in.
Yeah, games when in hand, that's also a fine win rate. I was just critiquing the like game one cast win rate.
Gotcha.
You start seeing cards like Falter, like creatures can't block this
giant turn. Creatures. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Or yeah. Creatures can't block this turn has an insane win rate when you cast it. You know?
Right. 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 And this makes if you do sort. I don't know if you have 17 lands open right now. If you do sort by gameplay win rate towards the most, so you see Smuggler's Copy, you see a bunch of efficient cards.
Yeah, well, and then Esper Origins has kind of a, you draw it more, right? If you play these self-mill decks with Town Breeder.
Totally. It's a huge part of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a card you put in your deck that you see all the time because of it, so.
Mm-hmm. Terra is another card I've kind of liked, and that just being able to mill five and hit Esper Origins a lot of the time is pretty nice, so.
Well,
funny enough,
you just mean to mill it to cast it next turn. You're not returning it.
Yeah, just
okay
because you're milling five.
Yeah,
it's a card I've liked. Yeah, things like that. I've liked it with the red white guy, the 3/4 discard two, that sort of thing.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
I was playing an Abzan Unidek with Primal Odin in it.
Yep, I've seen those.
And if you curve Esper Origins on turn, you play that on you flash it back on turn four. Turn five, you get two extra mana, so you can play your Primal Odin. And then on the third turn, both of them will tick, and your Primal Odin will get trample on the turn that it's going to have the win the game trigger. Yeah, so that's been pretty nice, too. And then, you know, all that is good in a unit deck. So I think we didn't really talk about Domain as surviving. It's funny that we even call it Domain at this point. But I think Yuna might be the new face of Domain if it's going to be good.
Yeah. Yuna, also another card that can reanimate Omniscience, by the way, though on your end step is kind of not ideal for trying to combo off.
Yeah, I did think about that. That's a huge downside. Although maybe it's still good if you build the deck in a kind of different way.
I guess another deck that performed well at the last Pro Tour is Golgari Roots that didn't get touched.
Right, okay.
I guess.
How much do you like that deck?
Well, I thought it was kind of getting played to, I guess, maybe have good matchups against the aggro decks of kind of the blockers and stuff. Rage being gone means even if you play against these aggro decks, they might not be able to trample over. That deck does a lot of chump blocking. And then in another kind of thing I'm looking for in Standard right now, I think it's very good against Dimir mid-range. I think basically like playing with permanents that your opponent cannot cut down or go for the throat is one of the best things you can do against Dimir mid-range. So Roots is really in that category.
Yeah, I could see that. Obviously gets a big buff being able to block and not worry about Monstrous Rage.
Yeah. Lockdown is annoying for that deck, though they can play Haywire Might in any number. I don't know what number you want a main deck, if any, right now, but those have helped. You know, the Team Handshake main deck for Haywire Might at the Pro Tour, I was not surprised. They also matter versus Prowess, the way you play those matchups, because Cutter's really strong, so you just want to answer it. And then you often get in spots where you were just holding up Haywire Might to not get Monstrous Rage because it could exile the monster roll. Those aren't things that matter anymore, but...
Oh, funny.
There's a lot of weird... That deck has a lot of very weird play patterns where... it's not even really like a combo deck anymore. It's just like it has this huge engine of Roots and then eventually Roots plus Tyvar, kind of letting them just have these absurd turns where they basically... If they did have a combo, they probably could win, but they usually can just say, I don't need a combo because I'm just going to like put a massive board into play and have my Scavenger's Graveyard Hate up and my Haywire Might up. And, you know, they're just kind of able to block everything. And they're still kind of going to do that. And there might be different tools. They usually have to be creatures to kind of accomplish that, you know, where it's just like, you know, even like a couple Deep Cavern Bats could be a big deal, you know, like I'm just going to have this huge turn. And at the end of it, I'm going to cast a Deep Cavern Bat and look at my opponent's hand and take a card or something.
Right. It's almost kind of like a, you know, board control deck.
Yeah, it's very heat fire. Yeah,
inevitability like, deck.
Yeah, exactly.
At least.
Also, Graveyard Hate, you know, Rest in Peace, obviously very good against this deck, but like Ghost Vacuum, like don't even board it in against them. It's just not very good. Like their cards just mill cards and return them. So you can't like interact with that in the middle of it. And also when you exile, if they have Roots in play and you start exiling creatures from their graveyard, it just triggers their Roots.
Right. So you need like lanterns, I guess. Although even that isn't
It's not really. It's just rest in peace, sir. I mean, Ley Line of the Void is legal in standards, but it was in Duskborn. But yeah, it's just it's a really weird graveyard deck where a lot of the graveyard hate they print is basically ineffective against them.
Mm-hmm. Are there before I read off the last? Well, I guess I've only a couple cards left to read off of this list I have. Were there any cards that you kind of have your eye on that you've liked that have kind of been held back so far?
I don't know if I've really felt like anything's been held back. The VV prowess thing is interesting because I actually had some VV brews that were kind of combo-like. And because they were kind of setting up these big turns, I actually didn't think Cutter would have been a good main deck card in them, but I was like always including Cutter in them and then kind of realizing Cutter wasn't very good in the deck, and then that made me just dismiss the deck.
Sure.
But, you know, it's like there's a lot of weird stuff you can do with VV. I guess, like, the example, it's kind of funny because my team played VV in Wild Ride at the Pro Tour, but they just did it to, you know, give things haste and pump VV's power and attack with it. But if on turn 5 you play BV, you Wild Ride it, it has 4 power, you can harmonize the Wild Ride, it has 8 power, so you can go to 8 mana. And then if you, like, play card draw and, like, shore up, which is, like, or Magical Damper from Final Fantasy, they're the same card, basically, like, +1/+1 hexproof, untap it. You can kind of just have these, like, combo-y one-shot turns. Highway Robbery has a lot of synergy there because it's a plot card, so that plays pretty nicely with VV, but also can, like, maybe set up and filter for your combo.
What does the untapping it do?
It lets you attack with it because you harmonize. You tapped it to harmonize.
Oh, you tapped it to harmonize. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. You hit with a giant thing. I mean, in theory, you could play, like, some big spell, maybe some big...
Yeah, there's no time walks in standard at all. The only way to take an extra turn, I think, is by flipping Ultimisia, the blue black legendary uncommon.
Yeah.
So that's not really a reliable thing you can do. You know, blue black reanimator used to be a thing, and you talked about that too with Emmett.
Yeah. Emmett Selch. That does still seem like a decently strong card. I don't know how much reanimator. I mean, I guess if you're not reanimating Omniscience anymore, you might as well try some creatures. There's Zombify at 4 mana.
Reenact the Crime. I don't know if you ever played against that combo deck in a way. So they're looking for looters that they can play on early turns but still loot later with. So Emmett is perfect for that. And then you reenact usually...
This is the Cryptic Command mana cost card,
yes,
right?
So it lets you cast like a non-land... Or copy and cast a non-land permanent from your graveyard without paying its mana cost, but it had to have been put there this turn. You might even be able to hit your opponent's graveyard now that I say that.
I think it's any card. I think I've read that card before.
And it does this weird thing with it plays Beseech the Multiverse, the 5 black, each player mills 10, and you put a creature or planeswalker from each player's graveyard into play under your control.
Mm-hmm.
And then it uses the Sphinx, that's the name I'm forgetting, that says you can collect evidence 10 or something instead of pay the mana cost for spells you control.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And this deck... Obviously, it can just reanimate these powerful things and then pass the turn. But on occasion, it like loops Beseeches and Atraxas and this evidence collecting thing to just cast enough Beseeches to mill your opponent. You mill both players, but like they draw first. Yeah.
And so the key to that deck is like looters. So I know there's a couple 2-mana ones. And then, Emmett would be a good fit for that.
Yeah, it's this good mix of, like, you play these... Like, Emmett is a perfect fit where, like, it's like a card your opponent kind of has to use removal on. So you're playing the game on an axis of, like, having some early plays that actually matter. You have Duress, so, you know, you get to interact with your opponent in some regard. And then, lastly, like, Beseech the Multiverse is only a 7-drop. So even if your opponent is, you know, playing a Ghost Vacuum against you or something, like, if they're playing the game too slow, you just start having these massive... haymakers in your deck.
You could just cast it, right? And then once you've cast one of those, your graveyard's thick enough to flip any Emmets you have.
Yeah, that too. Yep.
It's kind of neat. Nice. I was pretty impressed with Kefka Court Mage. I think that could be a standard card. Yeah. Now that
any card that is a complete bomb in draft, I think definitely keeping your eye on it.
Yeah, that's another card that I just for some reason didn't realize something it did, where I didn't realize that it triggered again once it attacked, which I think is pretty big.
Yeah.
So now that the format's slowed down again, I mean, it's another one of those things where it's like, it doesn't really have an obvious home.
Yeah.
Like, I guess you build some kind of controlling Grixis deck.
It's weird to say reminds me of, but it sounds weird to play that instead of looking for a way to play Shiko.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe. Shiko's definitely pretty strong.
I mean, if things are slowing down, and, you know, shout out to the podcast, Stock Up is pretty powerful.
For sure. Stock Up Shiko. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I played Domain a little, I actually had like 2 to 3 Stock Up in my 75, sometimes 1 main deck when I was trying it out. I just wanted more things to kind of get ahead in the game when I had Up the Beanstalk. And even though I was main decking High Noons, I was like, is there anything better I could play than Stock Up? And the answers seemed clearly like no to me.
Right. Do you think you could play a Domain deck with Stock Up instead of Up the Beanstalk in some configuration?
I don't really see the point of building your deck that way without Beanstalk.
Right. Like all playing the green Overlord
and Stock Up in a third color, I guess, are like things that you could play like a Sultai control deck maybe and have some overlapping things. Just because having a lot of mana can be pretty useful for a control deck. And I don't know if you remember, Seth Manfield got top 8 of Worlds with Volgari midrange. I guess that deck was a Beanstalk Overlord deck too, though. So,
yeah, just green black. It had that Robber's X spell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sultai, you have Rakshasa's Bargain.
Yeah, which not even arguably worse than Stock Up, you know, just
right instant speed.
Yeah, I could see just blue white control or blue and another color control being good. The Jeskai control with Chico is interesting to me, but on the other side of that, I'm really impressed with Fountain Port when I play against these decks. So sticking to 2 colors to keep that card in is pretty nice. You also you might be able to afford playing Dimir control now because you might not really have to play Lockdown in these reactive decks anymore with the bans.
Yeah, so I think a blue-black could be a real thing. Demolition Field is also, stock might be going up a bit of people playing a lot of that demon deck because they play that land a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, Demolition Field also for if you're playing with counter spells, there might be more decks with Cavern of Souls, still a legal card.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have in general been more impressed with 2-color control decks in this format. The Jeskai one, it's just so clunky. And Shiko's a bit of part of why.
Yeah. Because
you have to play a glut of you kind of want to play a glut of like sorcery speed 3-mana things. And then, you know, you have this tap out 5-drop that you're trying to play with counter spells. It's a little awkward.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, I mean, with River Regent and various lands that do things, it's not like your deck needs win cons.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I saw the blue white control person that went 8-2 had Dreams of Laguna in their deck.
Yeah. Mitchell Tamblyn.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm looking at his list now, coincidentally. Oh, I see. He had a heavy plains mana base with laydown arms.
Yeah. I wasn't so sure about that, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you expect a lot to mono red, maybe it made sense.
Yeah, it seems, you know, versus the deck that's mostly 1 and 2 drops, you know, it makes more sense.
That does make me feel kind of justified. I know it's just one person, but he did well at the Pro Tour, and I also sort of thought this before, that I think Dreams of Laguna is better than Deduce and Think Twice.
Yeah, the Deduce thing,
maybe not Deduce.
Like, so his deck had Lockdown, so right. Not playing Deduce makes sense. But if you're not playing with Lockdown anymore, I mean, I guess Ultima has a similar problem, but if you're playing Blue-Black Control, where you're going to have neither of these cards,
you might want to revisit Deduce, yeah. I agree with that. Another card from the new set that it's interesting. I tried it and I thought it was pretty good, but I feel like it doesn't have the support cards around it. And honestly, it kind of needs a lot is Sephiroth Fabled Soldier, which is the Blood Artist card that we both really liked.
No, great suggestion. So I can mention some things. We had some Sephiroth decks for the PT.
Okay.
One of the best cards of Sephiroth is Voice of Victory. That's just 3 bodies in one that turn. There are many, many one drops that are Doom's Traveler like. I believe there's at least three different ones legal and standard between white and black only. Like there's Nesting Bot, Infestation Sage, and there's definitely another one that just makes a creature when it dies for one mana. Oh yeah, the one that makes a mercenary from Outlaws. And yeah, I mean, I think there are some pretty good things going on. Maybe you can get into a third color. If you know, a deck like that looking for a third color is not crazy to me, just because you really need like the best in slot for everything to kind of work for your deck, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Like, you care a lot about having the perfect cards at every corner. But you know, also good mana could help, because that deck's probably gonna play what is it? Barto, I don't know his full name, the one from LCI.
The guy that has the unconditional sack attached to him, the 2/1.
Yeah, sack out, that's really important.
Aristocrat style decks like the Jund Cat deck and the original Aristocrat decks. So there's definitely a history of them being three colors. Fast lands play pretty well in that sort of deck while they're legal, since they, you know, a lot of the time your most important turns are 1 through 3.
Yeah, Concealed Courtyard's not rotating. So the black-white, and we're getting Godless Shrine as one of the first shock lands. We can talk about that on a later episode, but the mana for black-white should still be pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. And then I've liked Starting Town, too, as a three-color.
Yeah. Starting Town, I'm not a big fan of, but I suspect post-rotation it's going to be a card that is going to see a lot more play still.
Yeah, I think so.
Sephiroth, Voice of Victory. Also, people have been splashing black more in Boros Energy and Modern, and including Sephiroth in their deck.
That's
exactly cool. What I was talking about.
I kind of suspected something similar, maybe.
Where, you know, it's just like, Blood Artists are really strong. The effect is really powerful, and that one's even symmetrical. Like, it hits both players, creatures dying, and having it on a card that does anything instead of being a card that basically does nothing is really unique. It's not something we've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's pretty strong. I thought it'd be more easily fit into decks in Standard. There's just not quite as many things around it. So I was hoping maybe part of the problem, honestly, is Temporary Lockdown.
Maybe the sack outlet's not being like amazing hurts a little too. You know, the Boros Energy deck does have Goblin Bombardment, which is basically like the best sack outlet of all time. So,
right. If we had something like that, or maybe even just a little better than the stupid 2/1 in Standard, that would help a lot for sure. And then again, once Lockdown rotates, I think flooding the board with lots of 1 and 2 mana creatures that when they die trigger is going to be more of a viable strategy as well.
Yeah. I mean, also those types of creatures not having to deal with Monstrous Rage is definitely helpful.
Totally. The last card I have on this list is Stiltskin Moogle Merchant.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, cards nowadays, they're just so strong. Like, if you think about your last pack, Limited Chaff used to be something really embarrassing or bad to have in play. Nowadays, permanents are just so strong. There's nothing to really give your opponent that's like really demoralizing. But if they ever print something that's really embarrassing to have in play, I think Stiltskins could do some good work.
I think Demonic Pact and Harmless Offering are legal and Standard.
Well, that's not embarrassing to have in play. I mean, I guess you lose the game. But I was hoping for something a little worse. Something that like makes you tap something with like Cuban of Upkeep or something, that'd be perfect. Although I guess you could just sack it. Cumulative Upkeep, and then you can't sack it. That'd be
perfect.
Good. Give them something like that. It's funny. When I like play locally, some people play like some real low level meme decks, and I'm kind of tempted to build one along with them. And I've been looking at playing Stiltskin and Demonic Pact, and I think the card that's best with it is there's like a blue falcon that has
Coveted Falcon.
Morph or whatever, so like a tier 5 deck or whatever. But I was thinking about building like an Esper control deck that used Stiltskin and that guy and gave away Demonic Pact. You know,
I've lost to my opponent giving me Demonic Pact. There's also Greed's Gambit, there's another one.
Oh, what's that do?
It's like 4-man enchantment from big score where you're like, you make some bats and you gain life and draw cards, but then at the end of your turn you have to sack a creature, lose life, and discard a card. And then when it leaves play, you have to sack three creatures and lose six life and discard three cards. Like, it completely undoes. So you're like, you can't bargain it for value, but you can give it away.
Yeah, that's pretty good. See that? Now that's an example where like your opponent's going to be pretty embarrassed when they have that play because they have to sack all their stuff, but they don't yeah, actually lose. So maybe I'll think about including that one.
Yeah.
The other one I thought of was the blue Grimoire, where it comes in at six mana and you draw five cards when it comes into play. But then while it's in play, you like can't lose the game, but every time you take damage, you have to discard a card and you lose if you have no cards in hand.
Yeah.
So there's that one too. So now that I've taken you totally off this tangent, is there anything else you wanted to cover for standard?
I guess so. Gruul Delirium is a deck that, you know, it's been popping up every now and then. It's a deck that can win on turn three.
No way.
Pretty surprising. Yeah. It happened on feature match at Worlds actually that it won on turn three.
Patrick, did it really?
Patrick Beastie into FOMO, and then their two random mills plus their FOMO discard, because they have multi-type things, got them Delirium, and they played the Wildfire Wicker Folk and then cast Violent Urge on it, and it was lethal.
Oh, the Violent Urge.
Yeah, so the double strike combined with the multiple combats of Fear of Missing
Out.
Right. Yeah.
That thing doesn't give trample, right? Just double strike?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
The turn three kill was against, actually, I think, against JED, who maybe even had Leyline of Resonance on the battlefield. So very much just trying to.
And maybe that could be the new face of red aggro.
Yeah, it's going to be legal for a while, too. It's almost entirely a Duskmourn deck, though. I mean, I guess the mana base will change, but yeah.
Sure. Do you think that it's actually a good deck and maybe it was just worse than playing Mice, or do you think maybe it's a little weaker than that?
That's kind of the sense I had, to be honest. Yeah, it kind of felt like a pretty powerful deck that. It's pretty one-dimensional. I'm looking at these lists now. It looks clunkier than I'd like. You know, the only one-drop it has is Patchwork Beastie. I'd love to fit in a second one-drop in a deck like this, at least play eight. But it's tough to fit in everything. When you care about playing Delirium, it's weird.
Yeah. The only other one-drop I can even think of that's pretty good is the Pawpatch Recruit. Is that his name?
Yeah, that's actually the one that came to mind for me too just now. But yeah,
Offspring card, yeah.
Yeah. Another deck. This is not really me encouraging it, but people really like playing Golgari Midrange. I think that deck's pretty much just been so bad previously and when people play it that I can't really continue to recommend it. But it is a deck people play.
It was really popular. Sort of toward the beginning of Standard. Well, I don't know how long ago, but when Black was popular online, I ran
so
into
much.
It on the
and
ladder all the time.
If you look at any event, any large event that it's been in, it has had one of the worst win rates in almost every event I've seen it in. And it was extremely popular for so long.
People love their rock decks.
Yeah, I'll say this. I've said this for two Pro Tours in a row now, mentioning this deck. The cards in Golgari are so one-dimensional. It's changed a little bit. Dark Confidant, maybe something to do something different, but not really. That they're just like all these creatures that you have to untap with, or maybe do nothing even if you untap with them, and removal and lands, and that's like the deck is like just you draw some mix of creatures, removal, and land in any order, and in most matchups you basically have to draw like the exact amount of removal, which might be zero, it might be five. Like even from mono red match to mono red match, that number could be one in some matches and five in others, you know, and like it has no control over it whatsoever. Whenever I've tried building this deck, I try to look for like ways to fit in Overlord the Balemurk or similar stuff, just because I want my cards to like do more than one thing. But every card in that deck is like very single purpose, if that makes sense. It has no card selection.
Yeah. It's sort of always the problem that those sort of like Jund style decks have always had. And this, at least usually when those decks are good, it's because their card quality is just through the roof.
Yeah.
This one doesn't really strike me.
Yeah, I agree.
As having card quality through the roof. It's funny. I think Dark Confidant like could have the chance of being a decent card, but I don't really see why you would play it instead of Unholy Annex. And I don't really want to put both in my deck.
Yeah, that's
for obvious reasons.
Dark Confidant is I agree, it's certainly a card that could see some play, especially now that decks are maybe going to be less aggressive and we're talking about more controlling decks and stock up being good. You know, if your plans to cast stock up and you didn't have an answer to Dark Confidant, then your opponent's just going to get that same value for zero mana.
Right. I was playing ladder against people who were playing like mono black or black white decks with really low curves. They had Cecile and were kind of aggro decks. And Dark Commoner is definitely one of their best cards. I again run into the problem of like, I don't know why you'd build that deck instead of a demon deck, but maybe there's a reason.
Cecile and Dark Confidant seem like pretty good friends. I will say those two and Preacher are not really good friends. Losing life to your own cards with Preacher is actually pretty bad because then you often won't draw a card if you make it to combat.
Right. You just get the stupid 1/1.
Yeah.
Too much of the time. Yeah, the real big thing with Preacher, honestly, is getting that first tied life point swing if you can.
Yeah, and then also as the format is kind of moving away from aggro, I could just imagine that card ends up being a lot worse, weirdly enough, because I think a huge appeal to that card is the turn you play it, sometimes your opponent couldn't attack you.
Right, 2/4 death touch, just pretty strong presence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be cool to see Bob. You know, I speaking of limited, the reason I know some of the stats on limited cards is usually when I draft or play sealed, I don't look at 17 lands for a while, but then I'll eventually look at it. And Dark Confidant does pretty well in draft, more so than I would have expected.
Yeah, there's definitely a category of pretty low curve black decks, I think.
Mm-hmm. I know that was one I was a little unsure about of how it would do. Thought maybe it might even do bad, but it has such a high win rate when people include it in their decks, and it looks like people include it a lot of the time too. 76% of the time when they draft it, they include it.
Yeah, a card like Vayne's Treachery at common helps a lot too. Randomly, you can sack it.
Right, a couple things to sack. Boy, it's fun. I still don't have a huge grasp on how fast the format is. Some games are so grindy, and then some are pretty fast.
Yeah, I kind of have felt like it's not that fast, but that doesn't mean it has to be grindy, because the aggro decks in this format, I think what ends up happening is they go kind of wide and play to the board really well, and then they end up like moving around these job select equipments, and the game ends up taking a lot of turns, but your opponent's kind of just been doomed for a while, where it's just like, I have five creatures and each single one of these is something you're going to have to trade a serious investment for, because at some point or another they're going to hold all my equipments.
Okay, well, if we're talking about limited, we've probably covered everything for our episode here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'd like to remind you that you can follow us on, or you can support us over on Patreon, patreon.com/stockuppodcast. We have our tier at the moment is $1 a month. So for $1 a month, you get access to all the episodes of the podcast. You get access to the Stock Up Podcast Discord, as well as all of our sideboarding guides and deck list for our deck tech episodes. And of course, if you don't feel like paying $1 a month, that's totally fine. You can watch us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
All right. So we were thinking about sign-off topics, and Secret Lair Commander cards came to mind for me because I had some thoughts on them.
It's hard not to see them, huh? The marketing for those Secret Lairs reaches even me, and I don't have a super high online presence.
So specifically, the Sonic Secret Lair is coming out, and this is kind of beyond it being universes beyond. I've kind of seen enough of it that it doesn't even bother me that much that the cards are from a universe beyond. And I know these cards eventually, the way they do it is they're going to be reprinted in universe somehow. But it's kind of funny to me because they printed the Sonic one, and there's this card, Shadow the Hedgehog. So it's black, black, red, red, 4/2 haste. Whenever Shadow or another creature you control flash or haste dies, draw a card. And then he has, each spell you cast has split second if mana from an artifact was spent to cast it. And I just have to wonder, is that really worth it? Because it's just a commander people are going to want to play, and it's just going to incentivize them to win the game with a bunch of spells that have split second. And
people hate counterspells, Jacob.
Yeah.
Especially red-black players. So.
And then that one reminded me of another Secret Lair card that actually sees play in Dual Commander, but Dual Commander does not have this Deadpool card on Magic Online. So Dual Commander is mostly played on Magic Online, and you can see the results in the challenges all the time. And it has the same ban list as the paper version of Dual Commander, but Deadpool, I always see in the top 8 or even winning these events. And Deadpool, I was reminded of even more because you brought up things like Stiltskin. It is 2 black red for a 5/3. As Deadpool enters, you may exchange his text box and another creature's. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 3 life. 3 mana, sack this creature. Each other player draws a card. So it's a 4-mana 5/3 that gives heinous abilities to your opponent's creature and gets the own creatures. And it's worded in a way that it even gets ETBs.
Nice.
Yeah. And
so it's strong and it's pretty unique. Kind of fun.
Yeah, it looks fun. I'd want to put it in a cube.
Mm-hmm.
Or play it as my dual commander.
But the only way to get it is through that secret lair, huh?
Yeah. Or just buy it for $14 on TCG Player right now, apparently. That's
right.
Not bad.
On Magic Online, how much is it?
Might be no, a lot it doesn't of exist on Magic Online. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I
so
see.
So the format is different. It's
right.
It, yeah. It's just kind of interesting to me. They keep printing these cards that I think people are going to want to play with from these Universes Beyond things, and you have to wait on Magic Online. Or, you know, that the Spider-Man set is going to not even be online or on Arena at all with Spider-Man IP. It's going to be completely replaced by other things. And I think that that's kind of like a big deal. I don't know.
It might be one of the biggest costs. I've sort of just accepted the Magic is Fortnite era.
Yeah, playing with the actual Universe Beyond cards doesn't bother me. It's just kind of a shame that they're not on all the platforms. Or, you know, my Pro Tour playmat from Vegas does not have any Final Fantasy art on it, and I kind of think that might be because of a licensing issue.
Yeah, there's a good chance. It's the sort of thing where if they just didn't get per specific like if they made the mat kind of last minute and they didn't have specific permission, they might have just thought better not risk it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the first year, one of the very first secret lairs they did, I remember they did The Walking Dead, and it had unique cards, and they were legendary creatures, but they're really terrible.
Except for one of them, Rick.
Except for like one, right. And there was a bit of a buzz around that. And now, since then, they've sort of pushed the envelope a bit more, where this like Deadpool is pretty good, and then Shadow and Sonic and these guys. I mean, these cards all seem pretty pushed, and definitely they're from big IPs or from cards decks that people are going to play with. So I guess that means their secret lairs are going to sell out, but I mean, they were probably going to do that anyways, even if they were just reskins. So yeah, I'm not so sure about this decision.
Yeah, but it is what it is. Just interesting to me that they kind of print these cards and like, do they know they're pushed or like, I don't know. How could you not think that a card that could potentially give many or all of your spells split second isn't going to be a very sought after commander, you know? So like,
right. And his other effects are good too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, we'll have to see what happens with more from Secret Lair. I know people have it. Some of the Secret Lairs are really cool and you know, some people hate them. So
this card could maybe see play in Legacy. It's a 4/2 haste that if they kill it, you draw a card and then it gives your thing split second too.
Oh my.
That would be a disaster.
Crazy. Yeah.
Or awesome.
Nah, who plays Legacy anymore anyways, right?
Yeah, I guess you mentioned the bans too. It's weird to mention the sign-off, but there was no Legacy bans. And then Bosch and Roll, Brian Koval, posted a video that I watched today that was hilarious. He recorded it before today. And the video is him playing a Legacy League with Oops All Spells and saying this is one of the most broken decks in Legacy ever. Before he even plays any matches, and he says, I hope when this video comes out, it got bans today. And then he 5-0, 10-0, winning only one die roll, and all of his opponents are like interacting with him. And like, he like wins on turn one through with like double Pact Negation. It's just completely ridiculous.
Oh my.
It seems like a completely comical deck to be legal in any format.
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of thing which I can't imagine that they can keep track of, because only so many people that are working on the ban list. And
yeah.
It's impossible like, to keep track of all the formats. Really,
it's tracking
thoroughly.
Only win rate, but it's like, do you really want the deck that all it does is win on turn one to be the deck that
is remotely good?
Remotely good, yeah. And also, I mentioned this before with Neoform and Modern, but like a deck that basically reliably wins on turn one if not interacted with, and sometimes still if interacted with, like your opponent does not have very many options.
Right.
They have potentially 0 turns and 0 mana to like interact with you, you know, like it's
it's pretty silly.
Not interesting. Even if you win those games because you had double Force of Will or one Force of Will was enough, it's not like it was a fun game.
Right. You know, I've played Timeless a bit and I've kind of really wished like Force of Will or something was legal, because it's funny, Mana Drain is legal in that format, and Mana Drain just feels so slow. I've played
That's funny.
I'm just like, sometimes you just die, you know, because you don't have like Spell Pierce and you have Mana Drain on the draw.
Yeah, Mana Drain is not a staple of Vintage decks. I know it's not always in every list or like.
I mean, it's an absurdly powerful card in theory, but if all your opponent's cards are one and two mana, and you know you have to represent something so you don't die really early, and you don't have force, like there's no Force of Will, no Force of Negation, nothing like that. There's like subtlety, the elemental cards, but you know that hardly does anything. So there's a reason Legacy has been the way it has been for a long time with Brainstorm, Force of Will, and all that. So it'd be interesting. It's interesting that they're just sort of letting a deck that even through that can kill you on turn one live. But
yeah, I agree. It's a format that I don't really pay attention to because I just have never really had incentive to play it. Every time I've had a little bit of incentive to play it, I've seen this deck in the background. And it seems like it's only gotten better, not even through printing, just through kind of innovations and people working on it. And now it just seems like it's kind of at the best it's ever been because of all the people working on it. And it just seems weird that it's been around so long and so many people are probably just lost on turn one to it.
Annoying.